everyone. My name is Mike. Today, we're getting to episode one of Behind the Veil. I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Taylor.
Hey, everyone.
So this is episode one of Behind the Veil. Behind the Veil is a podcast where we are going to go far in depth. I'll let Taylor explain it a little bit better. I was forced into this situation, but I think we're going to make the best of it. So Taylor, please explain to our new listeners what this is all about and what's going on.
The goal of this podcast is to give you a peek behind the scenes here at Supervel, a little bit of insight into Mike and how he's built this company, insight into our products, our culture, everything that's going on here. We're building something very rapidly, so we're taking this time to slow down and stop and give you guys an inside peek at exactly what's going on here.
Yeah, so I've personally been asked to host a podcast for a number of years. I've done some in the past in different industries. I've been on a bunch of different podcasts with different hosts. I was not in favor of this entirely just because of how busy we are, but I also know that time is passing us by, and if we can share part of the journey with our listeners, with our customers, with our fans, or whatever we want to call them, that's very valuable. And I get messages frequently in the DMs, people asking why we haven't done that. So all this stuff showed up at the house, microphones and everything. And it's like, I guess we're gonna do behind the scenes, I guess, Behind the Veil. So Supervel, Behind the Veil podcast with a little bit about who we are, what we do, why we do what we do. And we're just going to go from there. So what are some of the things that everyone can expect with the podcast, Taylor?
So
nothing.
I'm not good at being put on the spot.
I'm asking the questions here.
I feel like I can only be charismatic if it's a really old person and I'm taking it.
let's preference this. So Taylor has never been on a podcast before. Ever in her entire life. She does not enjoy public speaking. So she forced me into a podcast, so I need a co-host. So Taylor is our co-host. How about we start with
this? This is like a double whammy.
Taylor, tell everyone a little bit about yourself and what your involvement is with Supervel Ammunition.
So here at Supervel, I am the director of marketing. So I manage all of our sponsored athletes, any events that we're attending, anything that you see on social media, YouTube, all that stuff has my touch to it. So this is part of it, me forcing Mike's arm, and in turn, I guess he's forcing my arm. I would like to rather be behind the screen, but here I am. So,
yeah, I'm forcing her into it. So, yeah, so Taylor being a little humble about that. So Taylor kind of handles a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. So director of marketing, media, and events, like she said, all of our sponsored shooters, sponsored athletes, sponsored events, anything you guys see on branding, she manages all the social media accounts. She manages me. She manages a lot of the stuff. I won't say she's our HR. She handles all of our employee benefits, our behind-the-scenes stuff for the company. We are a family-owned and operated business, and Taylor's a big part of that. So that's her humble introduction of who she is and what she does. But one of the thoughts with this podcast is we really want it to go based on you guys, the listeners. We'll mold it to what you guys are interested in. So we've been getting a lot of questions. We get questions on social media all the time. I typically don't go into social media anymore. Taylor will tell me a little bit about it. But we get frequently asked questions. So this first podcast is actually going to be a bit of a Q&A to get to know us. And then as the podcast grows, we will mold it based on the interest and what we feel flows well and you guys are interested in based on viewership and engagement. We'll dive into that. I know for sure we're going to do some behind-the-scenes stuff, behind-the-scene look. It'll be available Apple, Spotify. It'll be on our YouTube channel, so this is all being video if you're listening to audio. There's a video version of the podcast as well, so you could see my ugly mug and Taylor's beautiful, beautiful smile.
See me hiding.
See her hiding. Her camera is going to be on constantly, even if I'm talking, till she gets comfortable with it. But with that being said, we got that intro done. We don't even have a scripted intro, nothing scripted. We don't know. I don't know what the questions are. She does. So this is really off the cuff. Let's ease it up a little bit. What have you been up to? What's been going on with Supervel on the marketing and branding side?
So on the marketing and branding side, If you follow us on Instagram, you see that we have got this new super awesome trailer, and it's made its debut in Odessa, Texas, which is a big part to you. Tell us about your venture down to Odessa.
Yeah, so this whole trailer thing, Taylor's been telling me, like, you've got to do gun shows. You've got to go. We need to do more events. And we used to be a very big sponsor in USPSA. We'd spend a couple hundred thousand dollars every year in sponsoring USPSA. Some of the politics and bullshit pushed us out of it, basically pushed me out of it, and I drug the company with it. But we love giving back to the community, and we love to give back to the shooters, not necessarily organizations. So we want to make sure the shooters are taken care of. So she continued to say, hey, you need to – we need to go to gun shows. We need to go to more events. We need to get out there. Me as – the owner of the company, but also a bit of a face and a spokesperson, will say that it's made that a bit of a challenge. Also, I love racing, and I needed a new race trailer for my Chevelle.
Oh, goodness.
So I use that as an opportunity to be like, hey, I'm going to buy this trailer for media and events. Wink, wink, it's for the Chevelle. And then we wrapped it. So we took it to Purple Flare Wraps and had a full wrap done on it, decked it out. I kind of went geeked out on it, did the full inside on it, put in a concessions window, all new flooring. I put AC in the thing. I put a refrigerator in the thing, all new LED lighting, and kind of decked it out, because for years at events as a pro shooter, like, the climates typically suck. And if I'm at an event, I want to be shooting. If I'm not shooting, I want to be comfortable. So we have like zero gravity chairs in there, popsicles, come hang out. So the Odessa thing was a freaking trip, because it took us 16 hours to get there. So pulling a trailer, I think we took like 150,000 rounds of ammunition. So that was a heavy trailer, 22-foot trailer that's already heavy, empty. It took us 16 hours. I love driving, so I drove straight there. One of my sales guys, Levi, he was with me. He was like, this dude's a crackhead, because I just bang coffee and drive. So I drove 16 hours straight. We got there. And then when we get there, the freaking Airbnb, they locked us out. So we get there at like midnight. I was blowing up your phone.
Yes.
Like, hey,
I'm in bed.
Yeah. And I'm ready to sleep on the front lawn, because yes, we need to get in. So it was a great trip. Every night was late. I go to bed at 8 p.m. I was up till midnight. I think Marissa got in at like 1 a.m. and one of the nights. And then it was just, we were there Thursday through Monday. We drove back Monday. But Dragon's Cup is by far, in my opinion, the best held, hosted, smoothest running match that is within USPSA. If it wasn't USPSA, I would love it even more. Whatever it is, it's in the middle of Odessa, Texas, so people fly into Midland, but it always sells out and always fills up, because it's such a great quality match, and Team Motley and Marco Davis and them do an amazing job hosting it. You can tell the difference in stages. Like, the stages at Dragon's Cup are harder than national level stages, and anyone who's worth anything in shooting will tell you that. It is a very technical, very challenging match. This year, the match was a whole bunch of field courses, high round count, low hit factor. I got my ass kicked. Like, I haven't been training or shooting much. I mean, my only shooting is in our range here in the shop. I do a lot of accuracy testing, group shooting, and pressure testing, and chronographing, and stuff like that. But business has been so busy, I really haven't been on the range. I think I haven't shot a major match, like USPSA match, in over 2 years. I shot maybe one local in the last year. So I went as a competitor, exhausted, and got my ass handed to me. I definitely wasn't of GM level. I think I was maybe like A class or B class, but for us, we just went out there to really represent the brand, show support to Dragon's Cup, because they've been doing it the right way since the very beginning when they started the match and we started sponsoring them, and to get back to the shooter. So we sold everything we took, so I got to drive 16 hours back with an empty trailer and 60 mile an hour winds, which was fun, but it was a great event. That's one that we'll always do, and now that the trailer's been tested, we're looking, if you see us at more events, we'll have the trailer there. It might not be me, unless I'm able to shoot, but most likely I'll be there in some facet.
Hopefully it won't be like 2,000 miles away.
It was over 1,000 mile drive each way, and I think I filled up like six times. My truck was doing some bull crap. The emissions, I needed to delete the damn thing. Horrible fuel economy. It was a great business expense. we'll just say that.
Big tax deduction.
Yeah, so that was fun. I'm looking to go to closer events for the remainder of the year. As much as I love driving and disappearing for a weekend, the event made it worth it. You know, if we hadn't, if it wasn't that event, I wouldn't have done that for other events. It's because it's Marcon, because it's Dragon's Cup, because, you know, I get to go see JJ and guys that I spent so much time with training that I haven't seen much in the last couple of years. Atlas Gunworks, they were right next to us. We did a demo bay with them, shot a lot of our ammunition. And it's really cool as a brand to be out there and see the shooters come up to us and thank us. How many of the shooters are shooting our ammunition within the match. So it's great on that sense as a brand. And it's good for like my sales guys to go out there and get to see that it's more than ammo. And that's why we have that slogan. It's more than ammo. It's about the people. It's about the community. And events like that are priceless. You know, it doesn't matter how much we sell at them. It's the brand impact and, you know, getting to see the people that actually enjoy our products that makes it worth it for me.
Yeah. That's a big thing. Like, we get stuck here at the factory and we put our head down and we work and we're doing it for the shooters, but to get out there and actually connect with people is a big deal.
Yeah, we often forget, and I wish I could give all of our staff an insight. I try to. A lot of our staff are competition shooters. We have some good high-level GM masterclass shooters that work for us that are running our machinery, and they understand it because they'll be out on the range, but there's something different about being a brand that stands behind your product, the people that actually use and develop the product going out and competing with it. And a lot of other brands in our space that compete with us on the ammunition side, they don't do that. They don't have that out there. You know, I'm not the shooter that I once was, but I'm still a decent shooter. And I don't know any other ammo companies where their owners are masterclass, grandmaster, whatever, that'll lay it out there on the line like me and get my ass kicked in a match. And I don't care because, you know, we're there to have fun and support the community. So it's good for our staff to get to see that, because there's been a disconnect as we've rapidly grown. And as we onboard new employees, I think like for the last month, I've almost hired a new person every week. So to really get them to the exposure of the importance of what they're doing and why is a big deal. And it's not even a marketing thing. It's like a sense of pride, you know, that I want within the, because it sucks to be out on the range and someone has an issue and they come straight and find you. And that's what pushed me heavily out of, and it wasn't even issues for me, like shooting local matches and stuff, because it got to the point where I couldn't go to a match. Shooting is my therapy. And I used to, and you know this, I would go just to get away.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get away because usually it was compliments. Hey, your stuff's amazing. This is so great. We love what you guys are doing. We love what you're standing for and your vision and everything that you're doing. Rarely is it problems. And if it's problems, we make it right. But we pretty much don't get left alone. So it kind of took a little bit that away. But, you know, it is something to where be out there. And if there is an issue, why all the little details and the standards that I hold within our employees and our core values, why that matters, they actually get to see it. I remember Levi, like one of the first times, it wasn't at this event, it was an event in Utah. And after the first day, he was just like, holy crap, like, you're not kidding. You know, people come up and usually it's, you know, they're so grateful. And he basically said, I didn't realize the impact that we can have on the community and the people just by making quality ammunition and holding, you know, values and
a standard.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of stress. You know, I'm out there, I'm like, hopefully there's no problems this weekend. And there rarely is. And anytime there ever has been, we've made it right on the spot. And usually it's people's guns messing with them. But I've given shooters guns, like, here, run my gear. I don't care. Yeah. Like, I've traded. John did this. We had a shooter that had a bunch of issues and he had lightened his striker spring to like 3.5 pounds on a Glock and factory's 5.5 and he's having light strikes. And so we're like, well, here, run my Glock. Like, this is what's going on. Let's take it apart. Let's switch it. No more issues. And we tested ammo. We'll trade your ammo. We'll do whatever because we want you to keep shooting. And shooters do that. I mean, they start messing with stuff thinking to gain any edge. And it's like, reliability wins.
We're there. I mean, that's just a showcase of what we're about, building the community. And it's not about being right. It's about making it right for the shooter, no matter what's up. So yeah.
Well, good. Let's get into some of these questions before we bore people, because I'll talk for hours on end.
Okay. So,
and I have coffee and it's like 4 p.m. So I'm
I can tell by your speed of talking.
I'll slow it down a little bit.
No, you're good. So Mike doesn't know any of these questions. I submitted a Q&A story on our Instagram. So if you're not following our Instagram, go ahead and follow it. Just at Supervel. And people were able to submit their questions, and we're going to pick a few, and let's
cuff. Moving forward, we're going to try to do one of the question episodes like once a week, probably.
Yeah, I would say.
Once a week. So where can people submit questions besides social media? The questions, so on questions, like For those of you who've been following us, or probably if you're you're in our newsletter, you'll know that, and if you've been following me for a while, you'll know that I'm very open and transparent, yeah. And I really don't give a shit what people think to my own fault. But if you can ask about anything, you can ask about the business, you can ask about personal, you can ask about family, you can ask about racing, you can ask about shooting, you can ask about whatever you want. Taylor's going to go through there and just, you know, pick the top questions that fit within it, you know, and she's going to ask me unscripted. And so we'll see what happens, but
yeah. Hopefully nothing too unhinged.
But I think YouTube has a limit on the F word. So if they do, they might like, I'll do my best not to curse. My mother might be watching this.
Okay. So let's get into it. First question. This question is from Greg.
Hello, Greg.
Here it is. Would love to hear about your 223 solid copper hollow points, if it works for hunting, personal protection, or both.
So the 62, I'm assuming it, he's talking about, yeah, the 62 grain, yeah, solid copper hollow point. So that bullet, I think we've been loading that one and selling it for 6 or 7 years now, probably. Initially, that was developed as a defensive load. Where that separates itself and sets it, you know, apart from the others, it's how it performs through barriers. So there's a need in within some of the departments and some LE and law enforcement and for home self defense. Is oftentimes 223, it'll pack and just zip through walls. There's other times where, you know, and then it won't expand on soft tissue. There's other offerings out there on the market that they, you know, prematurely expand, and if you have to shoot through a windshield or a car door, you know, you miss that. So the beauty of monolithic solid copper projectiles and the way we design them and manufacture them is we set a criteria, and this is with any offering that we do. And we want, basically, we have our standards we want to hold. And if it's based on its intended use. So that intended use is a man stopper, to be blunt, or an animal stopper if you want to. So we want terminal ballistics on target, but we want performance through barrier. So why that load is a great hunting load and it's killed a bunch of deer and hogs is exactly that. It's terminal ballistics on target. Oftentimes, you know, I wouldn't say shoot through brush, but hitting brush deflection or bones, heavy tissue. So the solid copper, part of the secret with our solid copper is the heat treat that goes into it and the external roll sizing or, you know, forming of the bullet, which keeps its hard external. So when you were to go shoot through a windshield, we don't have deflection, which is huge. So like one of the LE tests that we do with that load is we go to a department, most of them are shooting, I'm not going to shit on other brands, but you know the common brands, and we take a gel block, a 6-inch gel block, and we put it in the back seat of an SUV, which is an average about, like, if someone's head was in the back seat of an SUV, it's like 6 or 8 feet from the windshield. Mm-hmm. And then at 100 yards, we allow one of the officers to point of aim, point of impact, shoot through that front windshield into that gel block, and it center punches it. So if you've ever done any vehicle type training inside a vehicle shooting out or outside a vehicle shooting in, you have certain holdover, hold under due to the angle of the windshield and the deflection it causes. So with that projectile itself, there is none. And it's the same thing with our solid copper 115, like our 9mm defensive solid copper, our 40 and our 10 and our 45. The bullet technology and the design of that bullet, we don't have any deflection. So it really sets itself apart in that. But also, as soon as it hits soft tissue, if you look at any of our solid copper offerings, you can go on our YouTube channel and watch the high-speed video of it. Mm-hmm. They all meet full expansion with 0.5 inch of penetration. So as soon as they hit soft tissue, they're opening up, and they all pass FBI standards. That one in particular, even through barriers. So going through a windshield or going through drywall or going through bone or going through denim or cinder block or steel or whatever it may be, upon the entrance of soft tissue, you're getting maximum expansion, 100% weight retention, and then double caliber expansion. So like the 45 expands all the way to 9.0. So it's double caliber expansion. The 62 grain is zipping at 3,000 feet per second. It's a very hot load. It's got a decent ballistic coefficient. Its intended use was not to shoot, you know, out to 600 or 700 yards. It's more of a defensive load, most 5.56 AR style, 223, whatever you're going to be shooting it with. You know, you're 300 yards and ends. It's perfectly accurate for that. And so on a hunting application, it works great. And it's been used quite a bit on hogs and mule deer and, you know, other varmint, we'll just say. And we've got some sweet photos. If we put the photos on Instagram, our page would get deleted because it's
not
it's
allowed.
Gnarly. Yeah, it's not allowed, but I mean, that's the nerd side of it. There's a lot of technical stuff that goes into developing and manufacturing of solid copper projectiles, and we hold it to a very, 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 very high standard, especially on that one.
Sounds like it would perform amazing in any of those situations.
Well, that's the goal. Not to be biased on it, but
yeah,
I've made some products that suck, and I would tell you that, but you'll never see them because I won't sell them if they suck. So
yeah, we hold a standard, and that one functions flawlessly in the 5.56.
Yeah, so with loading with pressure, so that one's labeled as 223. I mean, it comes down to pressure. So 223 maximum SAMI pressure is 55,000 PSI. Most of your NATO spec 5.56 are around like 62. Max NATO spec 5.56 is 65,000 PSI. That is loaded to spec at 55,000 PSI. So it's at the top end of 223 SAMI. Mm-hmm. But there's no functionality issues on 5.56 rifles. Like, I shoot a 5.56 chambered in my barrel's a 223 wild, technically. A little bit tighter, 1-7 twist. So it likes a 1-7 to 1-8 range twist. Anyone shooting a 1-9, like, that's old, you know. But 1-7 to 1-8 twist, stabilize at 6.2 grain. It's monolithic, so it's about 30% longer. You need that twist rate for stability for the accuracy. But, yes, it will work. But the other side of it, being in 223, keeping it in 223 spec, is we have a lot of people that shoot bolt guns. Mm-hmm. So when you guys see our stuff labeled like our 77 OTM, like, oh, can I shoot this in a 5.56? Yes, you absolutely can. The issue is when companies label stuff as 5.56, if they're at 5.56 pressure and then someone tries to shoot it in a, you know, a bolt action, you know, Remington 700 that wasn't built for the 5.56 pressure, they run into issues. So we put everything at 223 so we can hit, you know, all the market not with range. The guns. It's not the hot thing because all the military style, like, everyone wants to see 5.56, but
yeah,
there's very few differences. It comes down to pressure and some of the velocities and stuff. So we play kind of it in both worlds.
Kind of a middle ground. All right, you ready for the next question?
Yeah, that was an easy one. I thought this was going to be more controversial. Kind of disappointed.
Okay, the next one might be. I tried to pick three questions that were a bit different in categories. That way we could pick your brain the best. Let's see. So this next one is from David. It is, why do you have such a strong conviction on your products being American-made, even if it costs more?
That's a great question, especially right now with Daddy Trump in office. So the American-made thing. So I had a good explanation for this one because I get asked this all the time. And the easiest way I could relate it to people, and you probably haven't heard this explanation yet, so here's the first time for you. Law enforcement, military, they take an oath, right? So on the uphold the Constitution. Me as an American business owner and entrepreneur, I, even though I didn't actually put my hand on anything and take an oath, I take an oath, you know, to my brand, my company, my employees, but also to my customers, as an American business, to conduct my business as an American business. And part of that to me is making as much, if not everything, American made. Now, what is the cost of doing that? It's extremely, extremely expensive to do so.
Yeah.
But for those of you who've been following along for the past couple of years, about a year and a half or 2 years ago, I started calling this out and talking about it with certain brands, and the largest ammunition manufacturer in the United States being owned by a foreign entity is a national security issue. Still believe that. And the things that were going to come, and people are like, oh, you're Nostradamus. Well, no. I just pay attention. That's my job as an entrepreneur, is to steer the ship and to look further down the road. So I quickly started pivoting the brand as much American made as we possibly could. As we came closer to election time, lo and behold, Trump starts talking about tariffs. Now, a lot of brands are panicking because they buy majority of their components, their brass, their bullets, their primer, their powder from overseas, and now they're going to be hit with tariffs.
Right.
And the same thing is happening in the gun manufacturing. And if you pay attention, there was a massive flood from some of the foreign brands into the United States around like August, September, when Trump first talked about tariffs last year, and it kind of flooded the market and it really messed with prices, and the domestic brands were getting hurt. Mm-hmm. So what we did is strategically positioned ourselves early on, like even through COVID, to stay as much American made as we possibly could, to help build other companies on their American made, but also to further vertically integrate ourselves to where if we couldn't source it in America, we found a way to make it ourselves. Packaging is a great example. Like, almost every company buys their packaging from China. You know, there's that's just what it is. And, you know, I communicate with a lot of other owners in the space, other gun company owners, and ammunition, and they all think I'm stupid for this. I pay quite a bit more, to make our ammunition. But now a lot of them are scrambling because they're getting their stuff from overseas and the prices have gone up. So it was a lot of foresight, but at the same point, like I said, the oath early on, my goal as a business owner, it's not, you know, it's not to make $1 billion. That would be nice. But the reality is, like, I really want to employ wholeheartedly as many Americans as I possibly can. I want to give my employees the opportunity to live the same dream I have, the American dream, to make something, whether it's with me or elsewhere. And I want to hold that standard. And that's a big part of it, is like being a man of your word and building a brand that holds true and lasts. And the most secure way that I found to do that would be to focus on American manufacturing, even down to our machinery. All of our machinery is American, and I paid a lot more and I could have done with foreign machinery to have American machinery. All of our employees obviously are American. All of our components, even down to the packaging and the cardboard, I almost paid double to get our card down to the cardboard, the plastic trays, the primers, the brass, you know, all the components that we use are American manufactured. And there was times where some of the American brands that we worked with, like, there was better quality from foreign companies.
Yeah.
And we hold such a high standard, but the difference here is leverage. So we got to a size where a company of our size should be 100% manufacturing all of their components. Mm-hmm. But the reality is the rate of scale that we had since I came into the company in 2020, we couldn't, it wasn't realistic. We didn't have the infrastructure. We didn't have the building. We didn't have the power to do that. So we had to rely on other manufacturers. Well, money talks, and we're scaling, and we hold no debt, and we pay upfront. We don't use net terms, and we pay for everything.
Yeah.
So I get what I want typically. And so with other brands that we work with, I get to tell them the standard that I hold if they're going to do business with me. And conveniently, all those brands have grown too, and they are still all around and crushing it. And a lot of them are now, you'll start hearing them talking about American made, because I went to the point of like, where do you source your lead? Is your lead in America? Like, you can say American made, and you can look at the definitions of American made, made in America, made in the USA. It all means different things.
Yeah.
What part of that business, how much of it is American made, is a big deal to me. You know, yes, we can't see 100% of everything that comes into our facility if we're using an outside vendor. But if I can control it and I can dictate it with my money, who we buy from, we're going to pick them. Now, if their quality is subpar, because this has happened, I'll buy from them. I'll expose it. I'll show them how to make it better, help consult them, because that's what I am in part, as a business consultant too, mm-hmm. to make a better product, because then that makes a better product for us. It keeps us in business. We keep spending millions of dollars with them. It keeps them in business. They grow, we grow. You know, we all grow together. We employ more Americans. So my journey of employing more Americans over the past 5 years, a lot of it was indirectly too, was worth working with other brands and how we line our brands. And we've gotten so many opportunities from, you know, foreign companies.
Oh, I've seen, yeah.
At like freaking half the price with some of this crap. And yes. We just don't do it. I don't even entertain it. And it's the funniest thing, you know, when we go to SHOT Show, down to like foreign governments, foreign military, you know, stuff, we get options for POs that are bigger than most our competitors, just that PO.
Yeah.
The value on that, and it is like a foreign military. Yeah. You know, the same thing with like Hush Puppy and all the silencer stuff with that company that we do that, you know, some of those POs and some of that is huge, and it could be, you know, life-changing for us, but I'm so hard set on American made, and a lot of our competitors and people I consult with are like, dude, you're crazy. You're missing out on so much opportunity. But then I'm watching a lot of them go out of business right now,
right?
Because we struggled early on, and I capitalized on the opportunity with what the market was doing to position ourselves for the times like right now with how we do business. So yeah, that's probably my like part of purpose as a business owner. That's a huge part of my purpose. Is the American made thing. And it's great that now it's becoming trendy.
Yeah.
I knew it was going in that direction, and that's why, partially why we started pushing heavily over the past couple of years in that as well.
I do have to say too, I'm a witness on what you just said, because I saw many of these deals that were presented like at SHOT Show, like you said, or these connections that come through, you know, just other people, somebody knows somebody, and the door is closed, and the person that's presenting this opportunity literally will say, Mike, nobody will know. Just make the ammo.
I'll know.
We'll put it in the boxes, put it in a barrel, whatever it is, unlabeled. Nobody will know. Get the money.
Yep.
And like, it's so tempting. I could see the temptation on you, but you aren't even tempted because you're so stronghold. Like, just so you guys know,
well,
like,
it's not about the money. This isn't, though. It's about,
yeah, this isn't a marketing thing. Like, this is thing. You.
Yeah. Well, the craziest one was, I won't say the brand's name, but they're from Russia. And when Biden put down the import ban on, you know, Russian goods, and then they started peddling them through Turkey and other countries to get them over here. And so this is a big, like a $1 billion company. Yeah. They supply most of the munitions for the Russian military. They approached us. I mean, this is a $100 million deal. And at the time, I think at the time when we were presented by that, we maybe had 10 employees.
Yeah, I remember.
And that opportunity was going to allow us to go to like 100,000 square foot facility. Like, they were fronting everything.
Yeah.
And they were presenting it like, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
And do you
cherry
know
the, on top kind of
the
thing.
Craziest thing about that deal, you know, they came in, the CEO and all the top brass came in. I don't know if you remember this. It was it was a SHOT Show. A few, you know, how many years?
Shop?
It was like 2020. It was at our very first facility, and they showed up at like 6 or 7 o'clock mm-hmm. for a tour. And by the end of it, they were like, sold, let's go. Let's do this. And I still had to think about it. And, you know, with business partner, we went back and forth. We're like, man, this could really propel us. But I was at that point pivoting the company as much American made as I could. And I'm like, man, it doesn't set right with me. I got to sit on it. And then that was on a Monday of SHOT Show. We go on a SHOT Show, and they were hounding me like, you need to sign this deal. Like, we had a full contract. You need to sign this deal.
It was like a strong arm.
Yeah, you're going to produce hundreds and hundreds of millions of rounds for us. But beyond there, I'm like, where are these going?
Yeah.
You know, what's going? Is this staying in the USA for the US version of this brand, or are these going to go overseas?
Right.
Because that matters to me. And they're like, don't, that doesn't matter to you. We need you to do this. And by the end of SHOT Show, I ended up not doing it. The week later, the Ukraine war kicked off.
Yes.
All those munitions were going to back into Russia, because another American company did do this, and I'm not going to name names, but exported back through other channels and are being used. So think about that as a brand, like the dangle of, here's multi-hundred million dollar contract to manufacture this over the next 5 years, and then to come find out it's your product is being used to fight, you know, wars
against you.
Yeah, not even against us, because I won't align with Ukraine or Russia or whatever that whole mess is. But it's not a good look on a brand, and it doesn't sit well with me. And that's why we've always maintained, like, America first. We even, like, went away from our LE contracts for years. We don't currently have an LE contract because the supply chain, like, my priority was the American citizen first. And it pissed a lot of people off, because there was so much opportunity as the military had needs and as the law enforcement had needs, but the citizens had needs.
Right.
You know, and all these other big brands, they're just taking contracts. I'm doing it the dumb hard way and dealing with individuals every one order at a time. It'd be much easier to do the other. But I knew that that would build the brand. That would build the trust of the consumer. So we've kept it American made for the people first. And even to this day, we do manufacturing for other brands, and I hold them to that same standard. It has to stay in the USA. But still, our customers always come before any contract, any other brand. As we look at military and some of the developmental stuff we're working on and testing, like, it doesn't matter. The citizens, so when crap pops off, the citizens of the United States have to come first, because that's kind of our goal. And none of the other companies are doing that. And that's what happened during COVID, is they pulled the chair out from under the American citizens. All these big brands didn't. It pissed me off, because I was a customer as well that happened to. And we see immense loyalty because I didn't do that. And I was vocal about it. Like, hey, look, this is what's going on. This is what we're doing. And it has grown our brand to where we're at today.
Oh yeah. There's still comments on our YouTube, like our current YouTube videos, that are saying, like, I will never go away from Supervel. Like, you guys are the best. No price hikes during COVID. Like, during that time, we really rocketed in the consumer market because we were doing things right, and I think
some
everyone was tired
stupid.
Of getting taken advantage of.
Yeah, people are charging like freaking $700 for 1,000 rounds of nine, and I was still charging like $220, $230. They're like, "Are you an idiot?" I'm like, "No, I've
just been on the other side."
We still do this to this day. Like, we only adjust our price based on our cost increase. You know, we know with business what our operational margin is, and I don't raise my price unless my raw material price goes up, and I'll lower my price when my raw material, you know, prices come down. And that's just how we do things. And that's why there hasn't been price hikes since all this tariff stuff and all the talk of that, where other brands were jacking their pricing. Yes. And it's like, well, nothing changed for me because all of my stuff is sourced in the USA, and any vendor I use with sources their stuff in the USA. And we had a frank discussion with all the vendors, like, hey, you're not going to go jack your price up and gouge. We wouldn't be with them. Yeah. And that's why, you know, we've stayed the same. The big risk has been the powder side of things, but we built those relationships too, to where we can hold almost a year's worth, hopefully like 10 years worth. But that number keeps changing.
Okay. You ready for the next question?
Sure.
All right. Question 3 from Samantha. How do you manage growing a business and having a family as an entrepreneur?
It's a challenge. So this one's always interesting to me because and I get asked this all the time. This is probably one of the most frequent questions that I get asked in my DMs, personal DMs, is exactly this. And it wouldn't be possible without you, because the reality is, like, if you're going to be a father, a husband, or a mother, you know, wife, you have that obligation. Like, you're committed to that. And that has to come before everything else. But then part of being a man is, you know, provide, preside, protect. Like, that's my duty as a father and as a husband, is to provide. And part of providing is financial, you know, to making sure that our kids have a roof over their head and, you know, everything's taken care of. You're taken care of, kids taken care of, dogs taken care of, house taken care of, everything like that. But 35 years old, what are you, 34?
Yeah, you're so old.
So Taylor here is my wife. Sorry, we leaked that one out. But she's been with me in business since the very beginning. I mean, we've been married almost 14, 15 years.
Yeah.
We've known each other our entire lives. I think we've known each other since like first grade, preschool,
second grade,
like somewhere in there.
Yeah,
so
we
since
live
we're like
a block away from
since
each other.
We're like 5 years old, we've grown up as friends our entire lives together, graduated together, walked down graduation aisle together.
Yeah.
I kissed her on the podium.
Yeah.
So
crazy.
With that being said, I got to marry my best friend, but at the same time, she knew how I was wired. And that is the biggest challenge when men ask me, like, hey, how did you find a spouse to put up with your shit? I'm like, well, there was no other option. You know, we got married when we were 21, 22.
Yeah.
You know, we dated throughout high school and everything. She knew who I was and my expectations. And my first business, I started when I was 18 years old. And so she's always seen that grind. And I was, you know, lucky to have some great mentors, my father, her father, and, you know, people throughout my life, to where that's just how it was. It's been, I'll say it has been challenging. It hasn't been easy. And she could attest to this. But the biggest thing for me is, like I said earlier on, it's not even a financial thing. For me, it's a legacy thing, you know, for my kids. So many times within work, when there's many days I struggle to get out of bed. I don't want to do this. Yeah. I still have to get up at 4:30. I still go to the gym. I'm still in here before everyone else, you know, and that comes from years and working in other industries where that was required, but I hold that same standard. But I'm an example to our children, whether, you know, they want to be part of Supervel or not. I want that opportunity for them. It's not going to be given to them. It's going to be earned, but it's my obligation as a father and as a man to treat you right and make sure you're taken care of, but to treat the kids and make sure they get to see that. And that's the biggest thing lost in today's society, is there's no real men showcasing, you know, what hard work will earn. And so when I think of our kids, Mac, Brooke, Scarlett, I think of, like, man, they have a huge upper hand, because I had a huge upper hand just with the level of discipline that I was raised with.
Right.
And in today's society, that's so lost. It's not even a competition anymore. Like, they will be successful. And because of the hard work and efforts and discipline that they are going to put in, but also they get to see me do it, you know, and showcasing that. And, you know, one of the best mentors I had growing up, and it was an indirect mentor, his name is Tracy. He was my best friend's father, and he barely graduated high school, and he was one of the most successful people I've known to stay, you know, rest in peace. He's passed away. But I got to see someone come from nothing and build everything. But what I also got to see was the impact it had on his kids, but the impact it had on me, you know, 20, 30 years later, to where it makes a huge difference, being an example to your children, because they watch everything. So
they do.
Managing that is a challenge, because when you own a business and you have all these employees and, you know, are family owned and operated, and there's, you know, pressure and we're rapidly growing, and I have an issue with never wanting complacency or comfort, to where I push the envelope a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. Taylor tries to reel me in, doesn't always work. But that's why we've scaled, because I push the envelope constantly. I do not like being comfortable. I do not like settling. I do not like mediocrity. I don't like any of that. And the same thing goes, you know, for the family life and the kids. But the reality is, if I didn't have you there, none of that would happen. We wouldn't have kids. If I had met you, I would just be single, because the lifestyle that I live is not a lavish one, but it's an extremely obsessively focused, driven one that has no space or time for anyone's BS or anything else. But right. That's why we are where we are, and I'm 35 years old, is because I've spent the last 17 years as a business owner obsessed. Mm-hmm. And you've had to suffer and sacrifice a lot, and the kids as well, but it's delayed gratification, you know, and we push and we continue to grow. And I'm taking a lot more time now to enjoy the ride a little bit, because I don't want to wake up like I witnessed with my father, you know, all of a sudden you wake up, you're 50 years old and time's gone, right. And you didn't get to enjoy everything. And we both lost our fathers within the past 2 years. And so that's kind of been a wake up call up till that point, up until about 2021. I just put my head down and bulldozed through everything and built brands, built the companies, built success. Now, after seeing the passing of both our fathers, it's like, well, shit, there's more to life than, you know, wealth and growing all this stuff. We have to sit back and enjoy it. And so I kind of keep that at heart. And that's why the Made in America thing too, like a lot of the stuff has resonated with me, because I'm like, what's it all for?
Right.
Like, what are you doing? You're just like every other brand. Like, mm-hmm. anyone can make $1 million. Not to sound egotistical, but the reality is, like, a brand today in America, $1 million is not a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's like, you can do that. Once you've done it, you realize, oh, it's not that, it's not what it, you know, everyone says it is. You just built a company and you've repeated the same thing over and over and over, and you have immense discipline. Well, how do I show this to my children? But then also, how do I show my children so they can become a good father or mother one day? And you're a great example of that. So the reality is, balancing family and business, I'm fortunate to have the perfect mixture with my wife and my kids. And thankfully my kids are pretty wired, more so like me, in the sense that they get it. They annoy the shit out of Taylor, because they're
painful for you,
but. It's easy for me, not for her, because I'm away on business. No, I'm kidding. It's just a thing of managing and having a partner that understands the long goal and the vision. And it's the same vision I paint with our employees. Like, when people come in here to work for us, one of the first things I do is I tell them, like, I'm a dreamer. Like, I look at big, big, big goals. Yes. And I understand psychology enough to see what that individual wants. And then I paint the picture of how, what I'm trying to achieve and how they can fit within it if they want to, and if they uphold our core values and standards and the expectation that I'm going to put on them, mm-hmm. it gets the buy-in. And it's the same thing with you, it's the same thing with the kids, is we communicate it. And a lot of fathers and husbands and business owners, they don't do that. You have to communicate the goal, because the reality is like, there's a shit ton of suffering on some sense, to where at any point, you know, a decade ago, hey, let's go buy a Lamborghini, let's buy a multi-million-dollar mansion. We did that and then went back away from it, right? Yeah. So now it's like, no, we're playing the long game for a legacy that means a lot more, to make a bigger difference in society. But you have to have the spouse that believes in that. You know, you're not out there buying Louis Vuitton and all this shit. It's show up and do the work. But
yeah,
I think in our situation, because we met each other so young, we knew that's just what it was. Like, if you're going to be with me, like, that's just how I am. And you fit in perfectly with that. So
I get the same question in reverse. Like,
how do you deal with Mike?
When I am going to, like, all the birthday parties, where's Mike? You know, and he's always gone. He's always this, or whatever it may be. And I think other people see this, like, distance. Like, they see you off doing your thing when it's really not there. like, I'm invested in Superville and the things that you're doing, even when it was competitive shooting, as much as you are, like, I'm rooting for you. Our family's your biggest cheerleader. So it's like where people see like, oh, how do you have that balance? Well, there's not a balance. Like, we're here right alongside you. You're not leaving us behind. We're right here with you. The kids are invested in what you're doing. They want to come here to the factory. They want to go with you to pick stuff up. Like, it's a family thing. It's not, you have to involve your kids. You have to involve us. And you have, which has made a big difference to where all of us are invested in what this company is doing and what you're doing. And we're all together. If I have something that I'm interested in, you're just as invested. Our kids play basketball. You're the assistant coach. Like, we all intertwine together to build that family unit. I think that's where we're somewhat maybe doing this right. I don't know, because we all mess up our kids in our own ways. But I think that that's a big thing of it, is we're all involved within each other. And we, you know, we have our inside jokes. Good we alignment. Have all the things. Yeah, where nobody in our family's left out. It's not like, you know, like when you went to Texas, we still talked every day. We still, the kids asked what you were doing, how you were doing. We watched your shooting videos. Everybody's still aligned with each other. We're all rooting for each other. So we've built a good like family dynamic in that way, where I can, like, from an outsider's perspective, people don't see that. And so it's like, they feel like it's disconnected, and it's definitely not.
Well, it'd be very hard. Like, if I was advising a young man looking to become a successful entrepreneur or business owner or whatever, the person you pick is the most important thing. You either need to do it by yourself or do it with someone that believes in your crazy vision. Because to do it, you have to be crazy. And then you got to find someone that's also as crazy or gives you the space or encouragement to allow you to do your crazy. Because I'll say half the crap that I've done, any other woman would have left me 100 times over, just on the business sense and the risk level. That's what like gets me off. Like, it's a rush for me.
Right.
But I've never let you down. Never let the kids down. No. We've been top to the top. We've been to the bottom, and we always come back up, and we continue to focus. And so that's like on the family side of things, is people having a frank and open discussion. A lot of marriages don't have this, and maybe we are mature for our age because we've gone through so much stuff, is there's no feeling stuff about it. It's black and white. This is what we're doing. What do you think? Okay. We always prioritize the kids first. We prioritize each other. And then, you know, we go crush it in business, and it makes business that much easier. And I hear a lot of stories with other entrepreneurs, like, where their wives are holding them back, and that's their number one excuse. And I'm like, well, that's a horrible excuse. You should fix that. Or stop punishing your wife and move on. Yeah. Like, if you were this obsessed, or just quit, which most of them do. And the failure of entrepreneurship within 5 years, like, a big part of it, aside from financial, is this exact, you know, the spouse. Because if you have someone dragging you down, you are not going to be the best version of yourself, and your business is not going to be successful. So have that frank discussion. For those of you who ask me this question almost every day in the DMs, is like, if you have a wife and kids already and you have not done business, you need to sit down, whiteboard this out, put where you want to go and the steps of getting there and what their involvement within that is, what the sacrifice that you're going to make and they are going to have to make. Then you have to frankly look them in the face and say, can you suffer for 10 years minimum, depending on what you want to do, for this potential end goal? Yep. But if they say yes, that now becomes a big part of your purpose. A lot of people just quit in business because they're not patient. They don't understand delayed gratification. So for us, you saying yes holds me accountable to where it's like, there's no other option. Mm-hmm. Now, as we continue to have children, I think we're done. We have three of them. Now there's another person that's counting on me as I continue to employ and hire more people. Now I'm responsible and my purpose has changed. The purpose was to build, you know, an amazing company and brand. Now my purpose is to put food on tables for these families, to provide them health benefits and everything, not just for them, but they're for their wives and they're for their children and for you and for our children, to where that's your responsibility as successful. Unless you're going to go invest in like Bitcoin, which is, you're not an entrepreneur. If you're going to build, especially in the manufacturing industry where you have to employ a lot of people, your responsibility changes. So when I don't want to get up and I feel like crap, that's what pushes me forward, is it's like, hey, you can let yourself down. That's one thing, but you can't let your kids down, your wife down, and all these other people around you. And if you are, you're a coward and you shouldn't be in business, and go ahead and quit. Yeah. And that's why most of them do, because the pressure required from that. I mean, it's aged me tremendously.
There's a reason why you're wearing that hat.
No, yeah, I'm just kidding. hide all the dark circles. So that's a great question.
Yeah.
We could do podcasts for hours and hours on that. And I'm not some marriage guru. We've had our definitely had our struggles and everything. Yeah. But when I get asked this in person, that's pretty much my response is like, quit dancing around it. Just look her in the eyes and tell her your crazy dream. Mm-hmm. And if she doesn't support you, get rid of the dream or get rid of her. Pick one.
Yeah, she's like, got to believe.
If she doesn't believe and you are full, and if you don't believe wholeheartedly, we're like, if you want to change the world, if you don't fully believe in that, you won't.
Yeah.
You have to not wish into fruition, but you have to be able to visualize and see yourself in that situation. We do this all the time, and people think I'm crazy for this, but I've already seen myself 10 years from now, and I already know what that life looks like. And guess what? I did that 10 years ago, and I'm here today where I saw myself 10 years ago.
Right.
And if I don't fully believe that, and then if you don't fully believe that, it won't happen.
I can't fully believe if you don't fully believe. So yeah. You have to believe so hard that now we both believe, and our kids and everybody else that's following, all of our employees.
We might just be crazy.
And all the things.
Paint. Don't be afraid to paint the picture. And if you don't understand, surround yourself in business with people who have been there and done those things. You know, I don't have a lot of friends. We don't communicate with a lot of people. And I think like the family thing, that's why they don't see us, because I only surround myself with winners.
Yeah.
Including my employees. And if you're not a winner, you don't work for me.
Right.
You don't come around me. Even down to my family. I don't, with our family, I have limited access with certain parts of family because I don't allow that negativity. And now as I get older and more seasoned, it's almost like a slap in the face. And it like irks me at my core to where out of respect for them, I don't come around because I won't bite my tongue.
Right.
And so it's, you know, if you want to be personally excellent or take something to that level, that is what I feel is required. Now, if you just want to be comfortable and complacent and just make a good, go get a job, go build a career, go to college, do whatever you want. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, you can't have those words in your vocabulary, because while you're being comfortable and complacent, everyone else is passing you and growing. You got to continue to grow. So I don't know where this stops. And that's the self-discovery we have to find. You know, a lot of people make exits and we get offered all the time, hey, sell the business. I'm like, no, then what would I do? It's not about the money. You know, it's not about that offer. It's about the legacy. It's about the American dream. It's about offering that. And that's what I take. That's my payment, is seeing that within, you know, our family, our kids, and everyone we're involved with, to see that. So when you guys hear us say more than ammo, that's a little bit of an insight on, you know, supporting Supervillain, buying from Supervillain Ammunition, is the vision and the goal that it's allowing to be fulfilled, is the difference it's making in society as a brand. I mean, it's just bullets, right? It's just ammunition, even though it could save someone's life and whatnot. But it's what's done behind the scenes and the community difference, because I see that, and it's a huge problem in society. And I feel like it's my obligation as a leader of men and women to show them what it could look like, to show them what high standards can get you, because it's easier now than ever, because no one wants to compete. Everyone wants to sit on the sidelines and play with their VR headset. No one wants to do the work. Show them how to do the work. And all of our staff, you know, they've seen it. They get a taste. As soon as they get that taste, I'm like, oh, damn, I can be successful in whatever I want. If I follow this, I follow the core values, I look at it, and I execute daily on life, and I hold a standard, you become an anomaly. Your friends change. The people around you change. Everyone tells you you're crazy, but guess what? You win, and you win at life. So,
wow, yeah. That's all I have for you.
That's all the questions. The three questions?
Yeah,
okay, cool.
That's it.
So, yeah, that was episode one of Behind the Veil. We're going to continue to do these. We have a big move coming up. We're moving the entire factory again. So a little bit about growth in the, you know, the 5 years. And 5 years I've been in here. We've moved. We've expanded. And now we've expanded once and moved three times.
This is that crazy showing.
Yeah, the psychopath. There's a lot of good potential things coming, and it's allowing us to further vertically grow the company. I push our biggest growth phase in the slowest part of the industries, and I've done that all the time. And it's the craziest thing to do, but while it's the best time to capitalize on opportunity. So as the ammunition and gun industry is drastically slowing down right now, I'm wanting to aggressively push, and that's why we're doing it. It's a shit ton of stress. But we'll get some behind the scenes of the new facility we're moving into in July, and we'll probably only be there for about 2 years, 3 years before we have to move again. We're over doubling our size, so we'll give you guys some behind the scenes looks. Submit questions. If anything, we'll do a Q&A, a weekly Q&A. And then we will kind of branch this podcast based on the interest on shooting, personal life, finance, whatever. Apparently now, you know, people know that we're married, so maybe we'll get some some marriage questions.
I don't know if we'll be good at that. But yeah, we'll see.
Let's try to keep it Supervillain. as much as we can. But Taylor does work for Supervel. People say, how do you work with your wife? I technically don't, because she works from home most of the time, comes in a couple times a week, tells me what to do, and then leaves. So it's a good balance.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But
yeah, it's a good balance.
It's a good balance. We figured it out.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you on the next one. Submit those questions, and we'll talk to you soon.